And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Makes it a two-point game.
Here's your mismatch right here.
Now it's Luka. Deep three on the Luka Magic!
Take down Winston!
Welcome to 77 Minutes in Heaven, a Dallas Mavericks podcast that's part of the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Tim Cato.
I'm Dave DeFore.
Yeah, Dave DeFore. Yeah,
Dave DeFore usually is here. You're sometimes co-host.
Right, right. Sometimes co-host. Like, it's almost a running bit to see how much I can just stop it down to start with. And I think that's the most effective one yet, just not saying anything.
The next show, you're just going to be like, hey.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, though, that is kind of how the season feels, right? At this point,
we are,
this is what I do for a living, Tim.
You're a professional podcaster. I'm just doing the intros as oddly as possible until someone says, oh no, we actually need like the name of the podcast. So far, I haven't got there yet. Still 77 minutes in heaven. I'm still Tim Cato, and we're still talking about the Mavericks, believe it or not. Even as I ruined your wonderful transition again,
that's
the professional of you coming out.
And we're talking about the Mavericks, but we're really only talking about like half of the team because the other half is, you know, on this health and safety protocols. It's been a weird season already for just the league in general. The last few weeks in particular have just been, I don't know. It's the strangest.
Yikes is
a good way to put it. And I don't want to make light of this.
Right.
Because there's a lot of positive COVID tests out there. And of course, you know, I want everybody to get through this and to be healthy and safe. But watching these teams like the Mavericks have been playing without three starters for the last few games. And it's just, you know, you see people on Twitter in particular with their, well, I just watched the Mavericks one game. Is this the team? Wow, Luka fooled you guys in the bubble. It's like, okay, let's relax. Let's pump the brakes. And Tim, you and I were talking before the show. We figured you can't take away a ton of information from what we've watched the last week or so, and maybe even a little bit longer, to be honest with you. But we can take away some positives.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we were talking before the show. We basically agreed that, you know, we'll talk for the 2 minutes that we just have to set up the fact that things are weird, that our takeaways are not as definite or permanent as they might be in a different circumstance. And then we'll just try to go the rest of the show without mentioning the fact that they've played without, you know, like five, you know, there have been games where they have had five of their eight rotation players missing that you guys know. I mean, this is not a news podcast. I think everyone's very aware that, you know, it's an unavoidable, difficult situation roundly being faced by the team. And now we're just thinking, you know, I think everybody's hoping that the players are back, but in the meantime, we'll just do our best to just say some nice things about the players who actually have been on the court. I think Kristaps is the obvious starting point. He made his debut last week. He looks good. He looks healthy. You know, like obviously mm-hmm. he's a little rusty and you know, that's going to take some time. You know, he's going to get the ball stripped when he tries to back down someone in the post and doesn't realize that there's a help defender right behind him. Like, you know, just some of the rust things is almost like he doesn't have his spatial awareness back yet. You know, his jump shot is probably maybe a little clunkier, or some of his mechanics and movements and all that. But overall, in terms of the way he looks athletically and physically, great, great. And it's what I expected. But, you know, until you see him back on the court, you don't know for sure. So I think that's by far the most positive, encouraging thing that's happened for the Mavericks over the past week or so.
Yeah. 18 and a half, eight rebounds, that's a pretty good way to bounce back. He's not getting to the line, and he's not driving to the hoop. So he's not getting guys off their feet and trying to take advantage of the mismatch yet. So you can see he's kind of easing back in. But I think defensively he's looked better than on the offensive end. The shots really just aren't falling yet. Only shooting 42% from the field. So I think that it's important to note that defensively he has been extremely active and looks healthy. Pretty clear that he's just working off some rust.
Yeah. I fully agree with the defensive side. I think he looks great there. I think you're right. I hadn't consciously noticed that you know, he wasn't driving as much. I guess because it looks like he could, or it looks like he's able. He just doesn't mm-hmm. know where to find his spots anymore. So I don't think it's physical limitation so much as or even like a lack of comfort. I don't think it's those things. I think it's just, you know, he doesn't know where to find the spots. Also, the team has no spacing right now. They have absolutely no spacing. Luka said it after their game on Monday against Toronto, that every time he tried to drive the ball, there was four players in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
KP's seeing the same things. Although the team didn't lose its best shooters, like KP and Hardaway are those two players, I do think that, you know, there is a downgrade going from Maxi Kleba and Dorian Finney-Smith, two average shooters who will hold you accountable, you know, at the very least. You know, there's a difference going from those players to James Johnson, Wes Iwundu, and Josh Green taking mm-hmm. a bulk of the shots. And really, don't forget, it's not just about the fact that they're taking a couple threes a game. They're the ones providing the spacing. They're the ones every possession on the court to determining how close the defense actually has to guard them. And so that, in turn, of course, you know, just everything sinks, everything kind of collapses into the middle. And Luka keeps seeing that. And, you know, he did as well as he could against Toronto on Monday on short rest. And I mean, it's tough. We're going to stay more positive than not. But, yeah. You know, I think that's just one of the circumstances that is unavoidable. Yeah.
Porzingis looks good physically. I think that's a good sign. Luka looks pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
You know, still just.
What is it, 36, 16, 15?
Yeah. In a loss. Just keeps on trucking. And, you know, something that a lot of people are starting to pick up on is the fact that Luka's defense is pretty good. And this is not just a little blip last season pre-hiatus. It was not a bubble blip. Like, this is a real thing. This is how he's going to defend. And it's more than just basketball IQ and being in the right place at the right time and defending with his feet. He's efforting quite a bit defensively, and obviously he's a fantastic rebounder. But the defensive end with Luka defending this way and the rest of the team defending around him, if they can figure out a way to get something approximating last year's offense, this team's going to go to the conference finals. Yeah. If they're a top five defense for real, which they may not be, but I'm thinking that they're a top 10 defense, and we know they're going to be a top 10 offense. That's something, man. That's a team that's poised to do some stuff in the playoffs.
I mean, with all the troubles they have had this season, they are seventh defensively. And
pretty amazing.
By defensive rating. Yeah, that's really impressive. You know, without Porzingis, which is going to be the building block, the center building block of your defense, Richardson, Finney-Smith, Kleba, three very important pieces of that. Three players who haven't been available for four games now, something like that. But yeah, no, I am frankly a little surprised. I didn't think it would be this good. I thought that the defense would creep upwards and the offense would creep downwards. But I still thought the offense was going to be, you know, the driving force behind this team.
And it still may be when they get full strength.
Yeah. I do wonder, it does feel like they're missing one rotation player. This is something I'm writing about, and I've said it a few times over, you know, in the offseason, and then again, you know, maybe a few weeks into the season. It's something that I'm putting in a piece that's going to go out Wednesday, a conversation with Mike Pelucci, our favorite co-host of this podcast. No response.
Yeah, no, I have no response. I have no response.
The roster doesn't give as much ability to put different looks on the floor because there are multiple sets of players who are very matchy. Jalen mm-hmm. Brunson and Trey Burke do similar things. Wes Iwundu and Josh Green do similar things. And even to an extent, Willie Cauley-Stein and Dwight Powell do similar things. And then you have three rookies who are clearly not ready in Terry, Bay, and Hinton. You have Boban, who's a very situational player. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to overreact to this moment in time where the roster is just fully decimated, just missing rotational players. It does seem like there isn't as much uniqueness. And it's not something I identified in the offseason per se. I did think they needed another guard who with like more point creative ability than mm-hmm. than what Brunson and Burke would bring. But
Nate Hinton.
he did get a very early run out on Sunday for a few minutes. Didn't do anything from my recollection. But he's someone who I think will get some more chances going mm-hmm. forwards. But again, this is an undrafted rookie. And I am optimistic about him. I think a lot of people are. It still feels like the team either when it is able to do something different, it's able to do something different with similar archetypes of players. That does concern me a little bit. You know, like it's not just that Seth Curry left and Seth Curry alone was such a valuable fundamental piece to the team, although clearly he was important, but he was a totally unique player for the roster. I think just an obvious person to look at it. It's not just that they miss Seth Curry. It's that they miss a like shooting scoring, like how many knockdown shooters are on the team now? It's Hardaway and Porzingis. And that does make me wonder a little bit about how much the spacing is going to be affected, even when the full team is assembled again, if that makes sense. So that's not actually where I meant to go with this, but I'm curious to see what you think on that.
You know, they addressed one of their glaring needs by just adding all that athleticism on the wing. You know, they really needed that, and they addressed it quickly. It's just a bunch of guys who mostly at this point just aren't NBA players yet. Now, I'm not talking about Iwundu or James Johnson, but, you know, the young guys that they've got, they're just not ready to contribute on a team that, you know, is ready to make a little bit of noise in the playoffs. But I think in a couple of years, they're gonna benefit from that. So I could see them potentially being in the market for a 3-and-D guy. It's just that there's just not a ton of those guys out there because they're the most sought after commodity in the league behind superstar players. And so is there a disgruntled star out there that the Mavericks might be able to go out and get instead of a 3-and-D guy? See, now that's where my head starts to go. Like, are they ready to start pushing other chips into the table? And what chips are they willing to push into the table? Like, are we going to see them potentially with a Brooklyn-like, here are our next four picks and four pick swaps situation where they go for a guy like not James Harden, but let's say the next James Harden? That's where my head keeps going. They could use one more of those guys if they can't get a 3-and-D guy, you know, with what they have.
Yeah. I mean, the only name that is even remotely seems on the radar that would interest me is Bradley Beal.
But that would be insane.
Yeah. I also just don't think that it would, you know, I don't think they have the level of what Brooklyn offered. I think that others would do more. It's interesting. It's interesting to think about. We'll think more about this in the coming months.
8 years of draft picks from the Mavericks just aren't that valuable because they're going to have Luka Doncic for the majority of that time, at least, if not all of it. So, you know, you're going to have a certain floor and those picks aren't valuable. Whereas when you look at Brooklyn and what they gave up, you know, the players that they have are older. Who knows if Kevin Durant is even going to be there in 2 years, much less, you know, 5 years from now, when those picks are really going to be valuable. So that's kind of one of the things that's going to hold them back, I think, is just that lack of tangible assets to go out and get a guy, you know, like not Danny Green, but someone like Danny Green. Like if Wes Matthews was available, would they be able to go get him? Probably not. I don't think that they've got the pieces to go out and get one of those guys.
Right,
not that the Lakers are moving Wes Matthews, but.
In this case, you're talking like literally draft capital in terms of like future picks and stuff. This is not a situation where we're even, you know, saying players, the Mavericks didn't draft right or something.
Oh, although, no, I think they drafted very well. Yeah.
Yeah. And I am optimistic about every rookie they have. It would be nice, and I don't want to get too short-sighted. It would be nice to have Desmond Bane on the team right now. He would be playing a lot of minutes. He would be a different just a different skill set, a different archetype, like I was saying before, than anybody else they have on the roster. But they don't. So I, again, we don't have to dwell on that one.
we don't have to talk about Desmond Bane, even though I'm going to bring him up every other episode, you know, but we don't have to talk about Desmond Bane and how great, how great Desmond Bane would be on the Dallas Mavericks.
He's shooting 48% on threes.
Yeah. We don't have to talk about that though. Tim's just going to bring it up every week.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This has been one of the weirdest weeks of basketball for a team that anybody covers. I mean, it's just, there is no way to have any sort of tangible takes on the team. And so you've got to dig into these individual players to see what people are doing well. And then what we're thinking is, well, how's it going to look when you add Josh Richardson, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Maxi Kleber? It's going to be pretty nice.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing some of the limitations of Willie Cauley-Stein. But we're also seeing where he's benefiting from being with Porzingis and how different that pairing is than when he's out there with Maxi. I mean, honestly, this little stretch without those guys has given me more hope for how it's all going to work when it's together, because they're still defending so well without three of their better defenders. I think that there are a lot of positives to take, but it's a weird way to get there.
Yeah, I think Cauley-Stein is a good example of a player that we should resist grading too harshly,
yep,
because he is absolutely being overextended into a role that was not expected for him or is not ideal for him. I think all the good things we saw from Cauley-Stein, and you know, as he quickly broke into the rotation in the opening weeks, I would rather dwell on that than, you know, really criticize him for on the second night of a back-to-back, you know, just not being right at his best or you know, doing stuff that is more of the typical, stereotypical what we thought Cauley-Stein is, just a player who, you know, is doing things that are going to make his coaches just, you know, just going to drive them insane. So we've seen a little bit of that in the past few games, and I think that I'm just waiting what happened earlier and still seeing good things happen with Cauley-Stein on the floor. You know, I do think that, you know, even in these past few games, he looks like a more polished version of his former selves. I think it's fair to say. So I think that's, you know, that's an example of a positive that shouldn't be weighed down by these weirdo, you know, Matt exhibitions. I mean, they feel like preseason games. They really do.
Well, Tim, as we kind of wrap up, look, I think that we should also point out the role players on this team. They have done pretty well given the increased workload and, again, the weird rotation the last week or so. James Johnson is every bit the pickup that you and I thought he would be and has been working perfectly in that hybrid wing role. I think James Johnson, they may keep him around. He might be a guy who's in their playoff rotation.
Yeah, I mean, he brings the obvious spacing issues. You know, he is one of the contributors to the reason the spacing isn't what it is. But that's amplified because, you know, they're playing Wes Iwundu and Josh Green. And like I was saying, you know, part of that is just the situation they're in. I would like to see him screen more. I want to see him set picks a little more often than he is, and not just, you know, be, you know, hopefully be a, you know, we saw that we've seen a lot more hard doubles on Luka. We've seen a box and one defense on Luka. We've seen clear examples of teams just saying, we don't want it in your hands, Luka, because you're good and your teammates are doing their best. And it's their best, just, you know, it's not what Luka.
Bless their hearts. So bless their hearts.
So yeah, I feel like that's the perfect James Johnson role is putting him in those screens and slipping it to him, and I think that's a good example. But
yeah, they should be watching Steph Curry, Draymond Green.
Yeah, exactly. But all things considered, yeah, I think that Johnson is settling into that role. He struggled to create two pointers for himself in the first couple weeks of the season. That was a mild concern. I've seen more progress there. That he's just kind of more of a well-rounded offensive player while still doing his point forward stuff, which is certainly useful for all the reasons we kind of laid out. You know, just the idea that they're very like-minded players, like, you know, like Brunson and Burke. Johnson is not like anybody else on the roster. He is really unlike most players in the NBA. I think that's why he has value, just because what he allows you to do, even if there's some games where, you know, you're going to play him for 8 minutes, he doesn't really work, and you try something else. Like, that's fine, but he allows you to try much different things on the court, depending on where you pair him in a lineup. You could put him at the three, you could put him at the five, you can put him at the four, you can use him as a screener, you can use him as a ball handler. There's a lot you can do with him as a player. And even if, you know, just his efficiency isn't quite as high as you want, his three-point shooting isn't quite as dangerous as would be preferred, I think that's where his value comes in. It's just the uniqueness and you know, just kind of like increases the metaphorical playbook than like actually calling plays, but he increases the playbook by, you know, he just like doubles it. He adds like 30 more pages to the end. And I think for Rick Carlisle, that is a incredibly useful type of player to have on the bench. So yeah, I agree. I don't know if he sticks into a playoff rotation. I don't know anything. Like, it feels so far away from this team even being assembled at full health for me to try to predict things like that, but I don't think it's impossible.
Anybody else stand out to you? I think Trey Burke has been great. When the Mavs are going well, Trey Burke looks great. And when they're not going well, Trey Burke is just out there.
I tweeted this, but he's the most binary three-point shooter I've ever seen. It feels like a little basketball god in the sky does a random number generator, 1-2, or 0-1, 0-1. If it's 0, he's not going to hit threes. If it's 1, like, he's just going to be on that night. It's just like he's more likely to go 0-10 or 9-10 than 5-10 in any scenario. And I just think that's very funny.
Yeah. I like a 1-2 off the bench, you know, when this team is totally healthy. I think adding some of that length on the wing, I mean, it's very important for them, in particular because I just don't know if Josh Green is really ready to contribute to winning. He's certainly out there and active, and I like a lot of the activity that he has, but it's not equaling production yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Green has had moments where he's is better, but yeah, I would say I want to do the more polished player of the two if I had to. Them playing together is an absolute act of desperation by the team. I think it was a lineup with Luka. And then it was a 1-2 Green, James Johnson, and Trey Burke. And I was just like, when Luka gave his, you know, every time I drive, there's four people in the paint, you know, I knew exactly which lineup he was talking about. Because that one, you know, it was an interesting experiment to try. Did you go super just fully athletic and no true big man, you know, Johnson as your nominal big man? And, you know, I thought it was worth running out there, but it did not really work
that way. I bet we'll see something similar again. With
Richardson, with Finney Smith, with, you know, like they're possible starting five. I think it's more likely at this point that a big man ends up getting paired with Porzingis in the starting five. It, you know, those lineups looked really good. You know, the two big men lineups looked really good even before Porzingis' return. But certainly, you know, we've talked a lot about how a potential starting lineup is Finney Smith, Hardaway, Richardson, and Doncic. And then Porzingis as the lone big man. And if you wanted to take, you know, Porzingis out and make your first sub James Johnson or someone, you could make an even smaller, more athletic, more frantic type team and type lineup out there. So yeah, no, I think you're definitely right that you know, we will see. Is it true hoop? What's the thing about how the modern modern basketball will be just like 5, 6, 7 players?
Oh, that's the Dave DuFour.
That is your thing too.
That is my thing.
There's something else I'm thinking of that it's an old Henry Abbott thing. I know that for sure. But.
Sure. Yeah. I think anyone who's watched the league, for any amount of time has seen the increase in importance of skill. Like there's a lot of people who think that it's about going small. The truth is it was never about going small. It was skill ball. It wasn't small. Draymond Green may be 6'5 or 6'6, but he plays 7 feet tall. You know, the guy has incredible length. He's a super athlete. He's one of the strongest players in the league. And he happens to be able to play like a guard.
Yeah, offensively. He's like 7 foot and 6 foot at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's what it was about. It was about versatility and skill. It was about having a very unique Swiss Army knife. And so the teams that just said, all right, well, we're going to take a guy who's usually a 4 and we're going to play him at the 5. And now we're the Warriors. Well, that's not how it works. And because being tall ultimately is great in the NBA. This is why Kevin Durant is so freaking tough. Yes, he's an otherworldly shooter, but part of that is because he's 7 feet tall. He was an alien sent to this planet to destroy the game of basketball. You can't solve that. And you know, obviously Dirk Nowitzki was one of the originators of that. And so, you know, going small is less about going small and more about going skill. And so if you can add a guy like James Johnson and his skill set and his athleticism to the guys that you already have out there and play smaller, but still maintain a level of physicality that you're going to get with James Johnson, toughness, but you've got the shooting, you've got a little bit of his ability to operate in the short role. It does open up a lot of stuff for them. And you know, I think that given what we saw out of this team last year, when it was shorthanded minus Porzingis, and now you see what it's going to look like with these guys like Josh Richardson and Dorian Finney-Smith playing together and defensively what they're going to be able to do. Once they're at full strength, the lineup combinations are pretty limitless. And I still am with you. I think that they're one guy short as far as a 3-and-D type of guy goes. But that being said, they still are pretty close to a team that I think should be competing to make the Western Conference Finals. They're close.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's a kind of perfect way to end it. And just to bring something I was talking about earlier to a conclusion, you know, this, like you said, this team with Luka and KP have two completely unique players. We've talked about this so many times. And so when I kind of point to these pairings that are similar and the idea that the end of the bench is very similar, it's absolutely mitigated by the fact that, you know, the stars that they do have are just impossible, you know, just completely unique unicorn skill set, you know, unprecedented abilities and all those things. So, you know, I think that the way that, you know, this thing I'm kind of almost talking out on air is it manifests itself is at the end of the bench and is more of a feeling that, oh, one more player is needed. One different type of wing shooter, guard, playmaking, just somebody who does something a little bit different, would be a big help. But, you know, I think that it's certainly less of an issue, or it's as small of an issue as it is because of the players you have in your starting five. Absolutely.
Well, that it for this week?
I think so. That was all over the place, but hopefully a good 30 minutes of Mavericks talk, and we will be back next week with approximately 30 more minutes of Mavericks talk, and we'll see you guys then.
Oh my God! Shut it down! Oh, no! Let's go home! It's a wrap, Doug!
That is a wrap.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.